In 3, 2, 1.
Oh, shit. I was watching you and you didn't even have your
take two.
All right.
In 3, 2.
Scotty! It's a Victory Monday here on the Sports Bar Podcast. Florida State wins. We're currently watching Monday Night Football. The Steelers are going to blow it against the Dolphins. It's also rivalry week. Noles host the Canes this weekend in Tallahassee. And then Florida, Georgia takes place right here in our own backyard.
Heck yeah.
Gators, Dogs. Always a big party there. Largest cocktail party. I'm always going to call it that because that's exactly
what
it is.
World's largest outdoor cocktail party. If you're going to call it that, you better get it off by the proper name. Yeah, yeah.
Usually intoxicated enough to where I just call it a big cocktail party. But I'm actually going to start with two fun facts today, two little items that I thought were crazy.
Love fun facts. Hit me.
So, boobs and crazy names.
Okay, I know where we're going with boobs.
Okay.
They're back.
I was going to ask you if you knew where we were going, because two things. One, I felt like the professional radio personality in you probably shivered when I said that here on the podcast. You're like, oh my God, my
that's
to
okay. You didn't use the you didn't go with the T word to describe it.
No,
you went with
no,
the B
no.
Word.
So there were those of you that have not seen, and I know now that you know exactly
hard
what I'm talking
not
about.
To have seen. I
it went viral.
I'm ashamed to say I watched it in the doctor's office waiting room today.
See, this is one of those instances where since the boobs are tied in with sports. You can look at this up at work.
Yeah, I was like, this isn't inappropriate.
No, this is sports related. So those of you that don't know what we're talking about here, and my wife is shaking her head listening, go ahead and look this up. She has her phone in hand. Julia Rose, a Instagram personality, rather attractive, I'll add. Her and a friend of hers were front row, almost Marlins man style.
Yeah, Marlins man
at
level.
The World Series, and decided to flash the camera. Everyone loved it except the MLB.
Yes.
MLB has now banned her from all baseball games.
Quick on
forward.
The trigger finger. They had a letter to her like by the end of the day.
That's what I wanted to she tweets out a letter, and she's holding it. And it says she's banned forever, and she basically was like, oh, I guess I'm not going to watch baseball anymore. But how'd they get it to her so fast?
It was there by the time she got home.
Talking about like, a carrier like, pigeon.
Unbelievable. Yeah, it was. They were promoting, I think, their magazine. It's a Patreon-supported magazine.
And the MLB did not like that.
They did not like that. Yeah. And, you know, plays like that. I'm a guy. I don't know about you. I get distracted easily by things. I like people watching.
I was distracted,
And I would find it hard. My mom always jokes about how, like, her favorite thing about the best thing that ever happened to baseball was high-definition television so you can watch the people behind home plate. I don't think this is what she had in mind, but this was kind of right on that level. I'm sitting there going, okay, if I'm Garrett Cole, like obviously I'm a supreme athlete, I've dialed in all the time, but you think he noticed?
He had to have. I mean, they were in yellow shirts.
And the one
out.
Girl went extended.
Well, she was just sitting there basically with her boobs out for like 5 minutes.
Yeah.
Well, I think they're pioneers. They're onto something. It didn't work for them, but hopefully they've opened the door for future endeavors and promoting self-branding behind home plate. I think they are a little bit more monetizable, if that's a word. You can certainly make money off it better than Marlins man can by wearing his bright orange outfits.
Okay, so what's your second fast fact?
So, second fast fact, LSU had a kid commit today. A receiver named the coldest to ever do it, Crawford. And I looked
his
into
first
this.
Name, the coldest to ever do it?
It's legitimately his name.
How do you spell it?
D-E, coldest. The coldest. Is the coldest Crawford is just first last name. So this kid fills out the FCAT if he was a Florida kid. He's not. Or any standardized testing.
I mean, he had to apply to college.
His name is the coldest.
Do you think that fits in the little boxes and the thing that you have to fill out in those test booklets?
Let's hope this kid makes it pro, because there's a lot of stories to be written here. This poor guy, his whole life has gone through the coldest to ever do it, Crawford. So those are my two facts to open up the show before we dive into.
That's not, believe it or not the highlight of LSU's weekend, but it is still a pretty phenomenal.
But they locked
him
up.
Yep.
They locked him up. So commit there for LSU, and there's a picture of him and Ed O. And you know, those two talking together is probably to be a fly on a wall for that conversation. Oh, yeah. Would be amazing because everything Edo is money. And then him and DeColdest in the same room. Sign me up. Where are the tickets?
No doubt.
And then, of course, we always have our edition. It's our weekly edition now. But the weekly edition of what the hell's going on in the NFL. We're going to touch on that and every team that still confuses us and surprises us. And then college football. We got a shake up at the top. New rankings just came out. Yep, LSU, yep. Number one. Speaking
deserved
of LSU.
In my opinion, but we'll get into more of that in a little bit.
Yep, they've certainly have the resume and earned a couple hard-fought wins now before they go into a bye leading into the Alabama game. But I am ready to dive right into college football since we brought it up with DeColdest and the LSU Tigers. We might as well start with them as it seems natural. Our new number one team, LSU Tigers, come out and have a real battle with Auburn at home. As I thought more about the game, going into it, I thought that they would win just because by more than they did. Because I am not that impressed with Bo Nix. But they've had such a long first half of the season that seeing them squeak by and still win a tough game against a tough opponent, although they were at home and it wasn't a blowout and they didn't cover the spread, it actually impressed me that they were able to show some moxie and fight through that.
Well, we've seen that Auburn plays teams tight. Their defense is maybe the best in the country, the way they played. There is no sequence that better exhibited that game than when Auburn gets the goal line stand, stops LSU with a one on fourth and goal, and then literally gains 0 yards on offense and their ensuing offensive possession has to punt it away.
That's war eagle right there.
That was the epitome of Auburn's season.
That's what they looked like.
In an eight-play span right there. Unbelievable defensive effort and just lackluster offensive effort. At the end of the day, it got to the point where Auburn just couldn't score enough. And yeah, it's true. I mean, I think LSU and what they did against that defense, kind of wearing them out, is a good sign of things to come. If they play with that kind of effort against pretty much anybody else on their schedule, including Alabama.
No one else
has a defense the level of the defense that Auburn has this year that LSU will see the rest of at least the regular season. Yeah. And so that's why I think eventually you have to, right, we're in the era now, and it's funny because we haven't gotten the playoff rankings yet, but we're in an era now where supposedly more big wins are more important than losses. That's why these teams are scheduling harder in the non-conference and things like that, right? You're supposed to be building a resume for this playoff committee. And I think we're finally starting to see, it took a couple of years, but these AP voters and maybe the SIDs who are voting for the coaches in the coaches poll to kind of pick up on the same mindset where what LSU has done is unquestionably the best resume of any team in the country. And so because of that, despite the fact that Clemson and Alabama have not lost yet, we're rewarding a good resume more so than I think we're just rewarding status quo and continuation of maybe even
and
just verifying preseason notions.
Yeah, and I wouldn't call it a punishment. I know that's what you mean as far as for Clemson and Alabama. They're not being punished, but exactly what you're saying, LSU deserved this. They went out and earned it. They went on the road to Austin against a Texas team that now we have question marks about. But keep in mind, Texas is very injury-riddled right now.
Yeah, they are,
They lost to TCU this weekend is what I'm referring to. They lost to Oklahoma, a team that now also has a loss that we'll touch on. But they went into Austin and won that game, and that certainly looks good on the resume. On top of that, we now have seen them beat a tough Auburn team, who you just mentioned, is going to play everyone tough. And then they also, Florida, who is going to prove this weekend what they look like to maybe bolster LSU's resume even further.
Right, we could be sitting here looking at a Florida team that has entered the true conversation of maybe playoff hopeful. We'll get to that in a second. And LSU could be the only team that has dealt them a loss at this point in time, which is, at the end of the day, you have to respect what they have done to this point. And, Ed O, just give him a lot of credit for hiring
well. They almost ran
well.
Him out the door.
it was a hire that was scoffed at. It was this guy, great recruiter, personable, but can't get it done as a head man. But him hiring Joe Brady right now, Brady is the front runner for the Broyles Award, which is the award given to the
top assistant coach
in college football annually. I mean, this guy came out of nowhere and has revolutionized this offense. And with that, LSU may have just played themselves truly back into the national conversation for the first time since that embarrassing national title loss in 2011.
Yeah, and I saw on Twitter today, no one is happier about the change, the shakeup in the rankings than Nick Saban, because we do this all the time.
Yes.
We just said it with Dabo, I think 2 weeks ago we were talking about how Dabo's using all this, no one believes in us, the old Saban trick, trying to act like people don't believe in you now that you're number two, God forbid.
Now Saban can say, look, we got so disrespected we fell in the rankings even though we won.
And guess who they're playing? LSU, team that stole their ranking.
It's certainly one of those deals where I don't think Alabama needed extra motivation, but if you're LSU, you're probably sitting there going, could you have waited?
Yeah.
You know, like one more week to put us up there so we didn't have to give a little, however level of bulletin board material you think that is. I guarantee you Alabama's going to use it.
Yeah, they will. And that game, I can't wait for next week. We have such a great slate to talk about. And we're going to have Penn State, Minnesota. We obviously are going to have to break down the God, Mason Rudolph has thrown so many ducks already. I can't even.
It was picked off, I think.
Oh, another pick. So I have to interrupt my own broadcast here. Mason Rudolph needs benched. That's two picks in the first quarter.
Time for the duck.
To the Miami Dolphins. Time to put in Duck Hodges, my guy from Samford. But back to college football, we have to talk about Oklahoma and the fact that they probably still have a chance to make the dang playoffs, even though they lost to Kansas State. Didn't look good doing it, and in the second half tried to make a charge for a comeback, but they're still alive.
Oh, very much so, and this is why, Alex. I told it to you beforehand, only 8 of the 20 teams that have made the playoffs since it existed have been undefeated. I mean, it's crazy to sit here and think that a team with one loss is eliminated from this thing because these teams lose. And Oklahoma themselves specifically have made the playoffs losing to a double-digit underdog each of the last two seasons. Clemson has lost to Pitt and Syracuse, a Syracuse team that finished under 500 the year they lost to them.
And they still made it.
And they won the national championship that year.
You're right.
Alabama has lost, not made their conference title game, and made it. So there are so many examples of teams that have lost games and still managed to make the college football playoff that it's funny to me that the first thing I heard yesterday, and people on Twitter are all going, well, there goes Oklahoma. There goes their chances. It's like, you don't think that the combination of Alabama, LSU, Florida, and Ohio State, like there's at least two, if not three, of those teams that are still going to lose a game this year?
Yeah.
I mean, you're crazy.
Well, let me read you the top tens. And our friend of the program here, Bods, tweeted at us last week, get ready for crazy scenario season.
And he was right.
And he's so right. It was like a domino. It happened right away. So we have Oklahoma sitting at 10 right now in the AP Top 25 that just came out.
Mm.
In front of them, listen to all these teams. It's very realistic that Oklahoma slides right back up. Utah has Washington this weekend at Washington.
Huge game there. And
they have a lot to prove, but that's a tough game.
Right, and they're trying to get into that Pac-12 title game and get a shot most likely at Oregon, which would be a nice pelt to hang on the wall in their playoff candidacy. Both of those teams, you're going to get to Oregon here in a second, are very much alive.
Yep, and Oregon's number 7. So those two, I mean, that's pretty much the same conversation.
Remember, week one, everybody was like, well, the Pac-12's done.
They're
done. We even talked about it on the show.
Yeah, we did. And they have Oregon, that is, has USC this weekend. USC's no world beater, but they could beat the Ducks.
They're not a team that anyone wants to face, we'll put it that way, because they're elite enough in talent to be able to really make life difficult for people.
And they have a lot of receivers. Oregon's a much more physical team than they were of Oregon teams past, so it shouldn't be as much of an issue. But it wouldn't surprise me at all to see USC knock off Oregon. But number 8.
Already beat Utah, by the way. USC did.
Yes, that's right.
Yeah.
That's their one. Utah's one loss.
Yep.
Number eight, who we skipped over just to stick with the Pac-12, but Georgia,
who
plays
have another top 10 team. And really,
Florida.
We'll get to this in a moment, but they really have a chance to finally get that resume padding win that they've lacked this season this weekend.
Yep, and it didn't help Georgia that Notre Dame lost now two games. So we're looking at Georgia
their best win right now.
Situation against the Gators, and the Gators also facing a must-win situation against the Georgia Bulldogs. Then number five, we have 8-0 Penn State, who plays, and I mentioned this a minute ago, 13 Minnesota next week, which sounds weird to say, the freaking Golden Gophers.
Which Penn State has a lot more to lose in this scenario than Minnesota does, because Penn State has to stay undefeated before that Ohio State matchup
That
they can win head-to-head and get that berth into the Big Ten.
And they do have a game or two between the Minnesota game and the Ohio State game. So Penn State still has a shot to make it. But I just named five teams in front of Oklahoma that all have games on their resume that we're sitting here
very
at the
losable.
Top of our head.
Yeah, yeah. No one would be shocked if they lost
exactly.
any of those games.
So there you go, Sooners. Your season is not over despite an embarrassing loss in Manhattan, Kansas, to the Kansas State Wildcats. And then rounding out the top four, Clemson at four, Ohio State at three, who isn't slowing down for anyone. Right now, I mean, they're playing as well as any team in the country, including LSU. And then Bama and LSU will be facing each other next weekend. That's number one and two in the country.
Real quick to wrap things up on Oklahoma, we'll really know more about their candidacy over the course of two Saturdays in a row, the 9th of November and the 16th. Of November, they play Iowa State at home. Iowa State, a team that's still in the conversation for that Big 12 title game, 3-2 in the Big 12 right now. Always competitive. They beat Oklahoma just a couple of years ago, and everybody said it was the worst loss that Oklahoma had ever suffered, and then, you know, Matt Campbell's teams actually turned out to be pretty good. And then they play Baylor, who's currently undefeated and atop the Big 12 standings, the week after that in Waco.
Which is crazy to me. I Baylor snuck up on me as I looked at the.
They haven't played anybody really.
Oh, they played no one.
Yeah, but they're winning these games, and remember they came out of
their biggest win is
kind of purgatory.
Iowa State, maybe Iowa State or Oklahoma State when Oklahoma State was ranked. It was one of those two teams.
Oklahoma
regardless.
State, they won 45-27 just a week ago.
Yep, and then they went into a bye week, but that's a team right there that shocked me. I was
also beat Iowa State on the 28th of September, squeaked one out at home.
Okay, I was thinking of the Oklahoma State game because I remember one where they really have been squeaking out, and then they just exploded. Mm. But Baylor, I haven't watched a single play of Baylor football this year, and I look at the rankings today, and I saw them at number 12, and I was like, man, I totally forgot about the Baylor Bears.
Which Baylor game did I actually watch? Because there was one that I was watching a decent amount. It might have been that Iowa State game. I don't know. I caught the end of it. It was one of those where, you know, you're flipping over and the quote-unquote witching hour. It was like the end of the 3:30 window, and I'm just watching whatever's on at the time. And, yeah, I watched a handful of Baylor in that game. Yeah, it was definitely in that game as they kind of salted it away. But, I mean, we've got other non-Baylor games this weekend that are rather major headed, and we'll play a large factor, I think, in clearing some things up. We're kind of entering that month, right? You get into November, and then I'm not going to say you get all the answers, but things really start to clear up. The haves start to really separate from the have-nots.
Well, and speaking of two haves or have-nots, let's dive right into the one in our own backyard, the Georgia Bulldogs versus the Florida Gators. Gators coming off a bye, Georgia coming off a bye as well. And you know, it's such a tough game to really put my finger on the pulse of. I feel like the way the Gators have played this year and their game against Auburn and their loss against LSU really bodes well as far as them, you know, being battle-tested. And then the South Carolina common opponents there, we've seen Kentucky, South Carolina, both teams have played now, Tennessee as well. And Florida just looks better in every one of those games. Florida's catching points here. I know we're not going to dive into the betting aspect of it yet, but how do you feel about the game? To me, it looks like Florida should win this game. because they're receivers, and Georgia hasn't been able to move the ball, and the common opponents and what we've seen on paper so far.
I think unquestionably the more talented team is Georgia. But to this point, I would say the team that has played harder and looked better coached throughout this season has been Florida.
Yeah.
And they look more prepared on a week-in, week-out basis. They obviously don't have a loss to the degree that Florida doesn't have a loss to the degree that Georgia has. Losing to South Carolina with a third-string quarterback in does not look the same at home. Does not look the same as losing to an LSU team that is now number one in the country. So this is on the road, by the way. So this is a weird game in which the better team, I don't necessarily think, is the favorite.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, I think DeAndre Swift's going to have a nice game. He's a great player. Then they have their other running back, Heron, right, number 35. He's a really good player. But outside of those guys, for some reason, you mentioned recruiting, or you didn't say recruiting, but you mentioned how they're more talented. That's undeniable when you look at the recruiting rankings, but for some reason, these guys aren't playing like that. And I can't figure it out because they're not poorly coached. We know that.
It just feels like they're being hamstrung a little. Or maybe they're just not playing.
It's just small ball stuff.
Yeah, maybe they're just not playing loose and free enough. And it's, you know, it gets to the point where Florida enters this season and they're playing for everything, right?
Right.
It's every week we're just trying to prove that we're a team that is on the ascent. We're getting back to being Florida the way Florida is. Whereas Georgia has entered this game going, wow, the last 2 years, our season came down to blowing it late against Alabama, and can we just fast forward to that point in time again so we can, you know, prove that the third time's a charm against Bama? But the problem is, you still got to play the games leading up to that, otherwise that moment doesn't happen.
Yep.
And this Georgia team is playing, like, on a weekly basis.
Almost unmotivated.
Yeah, it's like the game that they're playing, they don't care as much about the game that is hypothetically in the future for them.
Yeah.
And, well, they can only hope, Georgia fans can only hope, that that loss to South Carolina serves as a wake-up call, and hopefully the coaches themselves have kind of looked in the mirror and said, what can we do to better empower this just raw talent that we have? Because nobody doubts that Georgia is one of the top three, probably most talented teams in the country.
And can make a debate for being number one.
Yeah, maybe, with the way they've recruited.
Absolutely. They're up there every single year, and Kirby Smart's constantly stealing guys away from Alabama's and Clemson's and all the other top dogs out there. But I think what I need to see from them this week, and like you said, wake-up call, it had to have been a wake-up call, right? They've had 2 weeks now to sit on it. So you think Kirby Smart's not just down their neck every day following that bad taste in their mouth against South Carolina? The more I think about it, we're in for a slugfest, and I'm so excited to watch this game because Florida always plays Georgia tough, even on the Will Muschamp teams. You know, who was it? Matt Jones and Kelvin Taylor, where they ran all over the Dogs, and they were 4-8 that year, or off to pull it up. Nick Jost will probably tweet at me or text me when he listens to this, all upset about me missing this one. But when they were down in the dumps, you could always count on them showing up for the Florida-Georgia game. And that's why I can't go against the Gators this weekend.
It's one of those where it feels like if Georgia gets off to a good start, then all of a sudden they're motivated, they're confident, they say, yeah, we're kind of back. I don't have any question that Georgia can, or Florida can bounce back if Georgia scores early, because they've been able to do that against everyone they played. Even LSU, when LSU was marching down the field in a matter of seconds, it felt like, in scoring on Florida, Florida had an answer. The other side of it, I don't feel so confident about. If Florida is able to set the tone early, and then all of a sudden those demons wake up inside Georgia, and they go, ooh, are we actually good enough to do this type deal? And with a team that might not be playing with a level of confidence that you'd like to see, it's imperative that the Bulldogs set a tone early in this one.
They're going to need Fromm and his experience to keep them calm, and that running game is obviously something they always lean on, so I expect that to be there. The Gators do have Zuniga coming back, as well as
Tyree Cleveland. And
yeah, dude, Cleveland's garbage, though. I don't care.
Who's the other defensive
everyone
guy?
Everyone tweet at me if you need to, but that guy's a waste. You have so many other receivers that are better than him. It's great that he's fast, but I'm talking about Grenard,
yes,
number 58. He's a good player. and their defense really lacked a pass rush against South Carolina. Granted, it was a rainy, sloppy game, but they definitely are going to benefit from having Zuniga back because he's a good player.
Yeah, you just hope that those guys are close enough to 100% to really be able to impact. And
they've had time now. I didn't know the extent of his injury, but he's been out. He missed the South Carolina game. Now he's had a bye week as well. But the receivers there at Florida, and Nick came on our show and talked about this, the way that they've stepped up this year is really helping Trask. Trask looked very uncomfortable in the rain last week or 2 weeks ago against South Carolina. The weather should not be an issue here based on the forecast when the Gators and Dogs play this weekend. So I think
significantly better than what a lot of teams in the country were playing on this past Saturday.
Yes, it was a sloppy, sloppy weekend. I was
personally in one of those, and it was quite nasty.
So, Scott, we have a Victory Monday to celebrate, okay? And we're already drinking some beer, so I'll consider it a celebration. I'm not going to dive that much into the Noles victory over Syracuse because Syracuse is very bad. They are the worst team in the ACC. But it felt like a much-needed shot in the arm for the players, the coach, Willie Taggart, the fan base, although we only had 50,000 in the stands for our homecoming. Okay, that's still a problem. But we went out and were able to put in some of our backups and actually just sit back in the second half and say, you know, this game's in hand. Let's see what this young kid can do. And to me, going into the Miami game, Florida State hosts Miami this weekend at 3:30 as well, I think that was such a great tune-up for us. We got to see the wild Cam Akers playing a little bit of quarterback.
Might be the best quarterback on the team.
I'd be so okay if we just started him. But I did want to lead with that. That's exactly what I wanted to ask you. Quarterback-wise, it seems like Hornibrook's the guy moving forward. Last week you said you're over Hornibrook and you're over Blackman, and I think we can both agree neither of those guys are the answer. But did you like what you saw from Hornibrook to help this team moving forward?
Somewhat. I mean, he still missed some throws. That trick play was just bizarre. I don't know how that worked.
It was
worked.
The weirdest play. If that was any other team but Syracuse, that worked. It probably would have been a pick
and
six.
And that's exactly my point. So Alex Hornibrook's won two games as a starter now, right? Yep. And they've both been pretty easy. Well, they've been against NC State and Syracuse. Neither team is any good. I'm not saying that I haven't enjoyed the fact that those games went the way they did. Syracuse going, I mean, really the score is not indicative to how much Florida State actually dominated in that game. They took they subbed in some backups, took their foot off the pedal in the fourth quarter, and Syracuse was able to get some garbage time points. But when push comes to shove, that wasn't even remotely competitive. And that was, it was almost like bizarro world. It was like, wow, it felt normal, but at the same time, like, you look through the lens of this season or the last several seasons, and you go, oh, yeah, like, the long-term Florida State fan in me goes, yeah, we're blowing out Syracuse as we should.
Yeah.
And then you remember that Syracuse absolutely housed Florida State just a year ago up in the Carrier Dome, and you go, yeah, that's right. This is something to be embraced. I'm looking at it right now, and I'm guessing that Hornibrook's going to get the nod again this week. I think Kendall Briles, from what I've heard, likes him better.
Yeah.
And, of course, he has a great history against the University of Miami as
well.
I was going to say,
guy's a cane killer. He's 2-0 as a Wisconsin starting quarterback, both in bowl games, beat the Hurricanes. I'm all for giving him another shot to go 3-0.
He just hasn't played. So it's almost unfair to Blackman in a little way because he's just getting destroyed against the actual good defenses we're playing, and then Hornibrook comes in against the bad defenses and plays just like above average, and it's good enough to get a win. But I just think that this from here on out, and we saw hints of it, I don't care who the quarterback is, the kitchen sink has got to be emptied. That means playing the young guys up front. That means running wild cam. That means emptying the bag of tricks.
Wild cam.
I mean, this is time for Kendall Briles to dig deep into the file folder of everything he knows and pull it all out.
Yeah, and the Hornibrook experience here, you mentioned that Blackman has been having to go against our good defenses. We don't have that tough of a schedule to where I need to give him a longer rope.
Hornibrook
should be the guy because he's calm back there. He doesn't panic. He doesn't turn the ball over like Blackman. Blackman's erratic. Yeah, he has a stronger arm, but he also takes more sacks. He fumbles. He looks sloppy. he's super emotional, which is good when you're winning, but this team's not good enough for his emotion to help us. I feel like his emotion is almost a detriment because he's so emotional and you can see it all over his face. You know, like, he's the leader of this team. The guys love him, and he's still the captain. But he's doing pretty well from the sideline cheering him on, and I'm okay with that. Hornibrook, though, man, this weekend did prove to me that is one of the weakest arms I've ever seen.
That's a thing.
It is. He was missing throws because he just simply can't get them there.
This offense would be a lot more dynamic if you had the guy that could take the top off. Blackman's arm can do it, but he's just been so inconsistent in hitting those passes. Hornibrook literally has a pop gun arm. He can't do it.
It's really weak.
Because of that, that's another reason why, and I think it's very smart that they repped and worked all these wild cam deals, because if you don't have a quarterback that can take the top off the defense, you might as well put in a quarterback that can sit there and keep the defense honest with a run pass option.
I'm glad you said that, because a lot of people were complaining that we the broke only time out against Syracuse.
The only time I was, well, no, now Miami has to prepare for it.
Well, but that's what they're saying. Why would you give them film on it? My answer, and I feel like we're on the same page based on what you just said, we haven't run it yet. You got to shake the rust off
against
a bad team.
Exactly. And Miami has to sit here and prepare for Hornibrook, Blackman, and now Cam Akers.
You're right. There's only so many new role in this offense due to this formation.
There's only so many hours that you can spend repping in a week. And if you think that Miami's going to sit here and maybe they will be, but the likelihood of them having enough time to really rep all of the different things they have to prepare for now and being experts at it are very low. This isn't something that they spent the offseason installing on. They didn't expect this to come in. And so I think it's not like they busted out a trick play. They hadn't run a trick play all year, and they ran seven last week, and you go, oh, now all the cards are on the table. If you do it right and pull it at the right time, no matter what it is, it's going to work.
Yeah, and Cam Akers, we've known this about him. Obviously, he was a quarterback in high school, and we knew that he was learning the running back position. Everyone had called in on Jimbo Fisher's call-in show. It almost became a joke. Are you going to start Cam Akers or give Cam Akers reps at quarterback?
Which, to continue that joke, Willie Taggart on Monday, when asked who the starting quarterback was going to be on Saturday, said Cam Akers.
I saw that, and a lot of people were like, no, but seriously,
yeah,
can you?
But
we're okay with it. So my one thing is, they kept putting Hornibrook out wide in that formation. Why don't we just scrap it and just throw in an extra tight end?
Yeah.
Jalen Goss, a backup offense tackle who plays tight end also. Or I mean, I don't know what you want to do with it, but stop putting Hornibrook
out. Well, it's years of this Wildcat deal where
you
the
have
quarterback
to put
splits
the quarterback
out wide
out.
And then
because you come out of the huddle together.
Just, yeah, it's always funny looking at what the quarterback does based off the different guys. Like some of them, like Drew Brees, actually engage people, and then other ones like, Jay Cutler just stand there.
So I'm going to wrap with this with the Noles here. Mm-hmm. This game, and I've said it against Wake Forest, must win, okay? We have too many must wins these days, but the fact of the matter is this is a must win. Taggart has never beaten Florida. He has never beaten Miami, and he really doesn't have a big win on his schedule or on his resume. If Florida State wins this game, this is such a fork in the road game. We could either be 5-7 if we lose and be just devastated and go lose to Boston College, which I don't see happening, but just hypothetically, we're going to lose to Florida. We know this. And we're going to beat Alabama State. So now we're looking at 5-7. But if we win, Scott, and we get the ball rolling, we need one more win to go to a bowl game. Now we're talking about Boston College, a nooner, which we should be able to go up there and win with their backup quarterback. That's one win against Miami if we do. Boston College, one win. Alabama State, one win. Now we're looking at a 7-win team going into a bowl game with a potential to play a FAU or some average team, and we're going to rattle off 8 wins. This is a huge week for the Noles.
Yeah. It's funny because you've actually kind of talked me into this being bigger than it was. I was sitting there just saying you had to just find a way to win one of the next two, because you win one of the next two, you're going bowling. Because I just refuse to believe that this team is going to lose to Alabama State at home. And then you've got your 6 wins,
yep,
and you're bowl eligible, and you're in. But
Talking about lipstick on a pig, but hey, that's what this program needs right now.
Right, but if you, what you're talking about is momentum, something we saw a teeny tiny amount late in the season last year where this team actually almost made a push to a bowl game, but we could have some honest-to-God momentum that turns into this program is actually improving and will also, I mean, if this team's has 7 wins, goes to a bowl and has a chance to get 8 wins, and you know, regardless of the, go ahead and put to bed all the Fire Willie Taggart stuff, because that is it's gone. It is
right.
Long gone.
And I don't think either of us think
for
Willie Taggart.
By the way, sorry. Yes. Let me preface that or put an addendum onto the end of it. For he will not be fired at the end of this season, and then next year it all starts all over again.
Which I don't think would be good for our program if we had to fire him, because we'd have to be cutting.
I don't think it's good for any program to fire anybody after 2
we'd
years.
We'd have to be cutting ties, and that we've discussed that, you know, minimally, because you can't dive too much into it. There's so much financial burden on it. We're struggling right now financially as it is. Mm-hmm. So really, if we could get a little bit of momentum, it'd stop the bleeding, and we'd be able to just kind of status quo and hold our ground for a little bit and then figure it out next year when the contract's up. But that's what we need this year, and I think the Miami game provides that opportunity. And we haven't even touched on it this week. I've been saying it every week. Dude, Miami's not good, okay?
No, they're bad.
This is a game
they don't
where
know who their
should
quarterback is going to be either.
Right.
The defense is good. We know that.
Yeah.
But
and they have athletes there. But we are at home. This is a game that Florida State has to win. I mean, this is like I am pushing the siren right now. I don't have a sound we can enter, but give me the hurricane siren. We are in code red, must win, do or die.
Yeah.
This Saturday.
You've talked me into it. I'm all in now on Knowles' quote-unquote must win on Saturday and have a great opportunity to do it.
There we go.
Resiliency, by the way. I will end with that. This team bounced back after a really tough loss in which they could have folded up the tents and gone home, and they didn't.
Yeah,
and
it seems like the guys haven't quit at all this year.
No,
and
they
haven't said that
year
enough. Yeah, they did last year, and we haven't said that enough. They have not quit on the team, on their teammates, on their coaches. So that's certainly a positive that Taggart has been able to breed here.
Don't forget, they also quit on Jimbo Fisher his last year. So,
well, that's what started the whole demise of our program.
Yeah,
but we've probably given more Knowles talk than we expected just because this season's been hard to talk about. You ready to flip over a little NFL?
Let's hit your Turco trifecta first to really and truly wrap that college football. Sorry.
Well, hey, there's a reason I was trying to breeze past that. And you know what?
Yeah.
While you give the fans and our listeners a brief rundown, my Turco trifecta was so bad, I'm going to go grab us both another beer because I can't watch the Steelers play this kind of football.
Okay.
Without a beer
rare
in my hand.
A rare two for night, but I'm all in.
A two for two here. Scott Manzi and Alex Turco going back for beer two.
All right. Turco trifecta last week, after a good week the week before, he goes 2-0 with a push. Well, to say things didn't go well this week might be an understatement. Alex, let's go ahead and look at your picks. You had Notre Dame at Michigan, winning the game in a pick 'em. That did not end well as the Wolverines win a blowout at home in a monsoon. You had Texas at TCU in a pick 'em. Well, the Longhorns dropped another game, their third of the season, to the Horned Frogs. And then you had Oklahoma covering 21.5 at Kansas State. And not only did Oklahoma not cover the 21.5, but for the, I think it's the fourth season in a row, the Sooners lose a game as a double-digit point favorite. Kansas State, by the way, 5-2. Not a bad football team.
No.
But the way things went down, where they rattled off 28 unanswered points in the fourth quarter, and then Oklahoma had to rally late and try an onside kick late, but we'll put it this way. You went 0-3. You're down 9-15 on the season. You're looking for a bounce back this week.
Yeah, 9-15 on the season, certainly not where I wanted to be after my, you know, I had a nice week, 2-0 and a push 2 weeks ago. I have to explain myself a little bit with some of these, just because you have to see where I was coming from. I actually got a lot of feedback, mainly people giving me shit, as you can imagine, but people like, hey, nice Turco trifecta. It was a tough week for a lot of people. I looked up a couple other picks after I made mine. You know, I make mine on Monday night here with you.
Yeah, and I mean, it's a long way out.
And I mentioned that. So as the week went on, I listened to two other podcasts where guys make picks, and I respect their opinions, and just love listening to other people's thoughts as we enter the weekend. The Kansas State-Oklahoma one, that is what it is. That point spread was probably too big for me to touch there at Kansas State. It just felt like a nooner, so I wasn't worried about the upset special there. And obviously, I was wrong there. So nothing to say. My Notre Dame game's the one that eats me up the most. I should have known that was Michigan was due for a win from the start. They haven't beaten anyone under Harbaugh. They played Penn State tough and rallied against Penn State the week before and lost on a dropped pass from one of their receivers to potentially, well, I guess they didn't lose, but to potentially send it to an overtime or give themselves a chance to win. Very disappointed in my thought process there, okay? I shouldn't have believed in Notre Dame like I did.
Well, I kind of understand your thought process, too, because I know Michigan plays tough. But in a pick 'em, I would have still picked Notre Dame to win the game straight up. And no one expected it to be a monsoon in which Michigan actually ran a game plan that worked for the weather while Notre Dame threw the ball 26
times.
That's
what I was going to say. Ian Book was throwing the ball in the rain, and they couldn't run the ball the whole game. It just didn't work out, and Michigan plays good defense, so it actually helped them a lot.
Plus, Denard was back up there this weekend, so he was probably helping them out.
Shoelace, that's right. Yeah,
bailed on the Dolphins and went up to go see the alma mater beat Notre Dame this week.
Well, good for him. He brought didn't me bad luck.
Didn't miss a whole lot in Indianapolis either.
So this week I actually am going to pay homage to Michigan based on how they did me wrong this week. I am giving 17.5 points as they play Maryland, the Terrapins, who are
bad,
absolutely awful. I'm hoping Michigan can string together a little momentum now. They're a pretty good football team defensively. We just touched on that. But maybe this win against Notre Dame gives Shea Patterson in the offense a little bit of confidence. I'm going to go big blue here, given 17.5. I know it's over a football number. Everyone always says that. 17 being the football number. Unfortunately, there's a hook there, but I think this is like a 20-point game. I just don't think Maryland's any good at all.
Is this in Bird or is this in the Big House?
It's, what's it called, Bird?
Bird Stadium.
Bird? Oh.
College Park.
Yes, BYRD, right?
BYRD,
yes,
you're right.
I forgot about that. Yes, it is in Bird Stadium. And that makes no difference because they have no fan base.
Maryland doesn't have a quarterback right now either. I think Mike Locksley will get that thing going some.
He can recruit.
Definitely. And he can coach too. So once they get healthy and get some players in there. But yeah, that's not this week.
That is not this week against Michigan. It better not be for the sake of my trifecta. I've kind of touched on this, and I'm sure you could tell by the way I talked about it. I really like the Gators this weekend getting 5.5 points. I feel like they're a really good football team, and unfortunately, we're going to have to talk about the damn orange and blue a couple more weeks here when it comes to playoff implications, because I do think they're going to get a statement win here in Jacksonville, and that 5.5 points there in against the Dogs, it's going to be a close game. I'm not saying the Gators are going to blow them out, but I do like the Gators here straight up, so I'm going to take my 5.5. And then this one is a Thursday night special for you.
Ooh.
I don't love the slate in general. There are a couple games that I'm going to wait for the lines to move.
Mm.
So Thursday night, Appalachian State, ranked Appalachian State, is giving.
The Nears.
Giving 16.5 to Georgia Southern. Georgia Southern. Oh, you were looking at me.
Where's this game at?
It's at Appalachian State in Boone. And Appalachian State always plays tough against. They just had a huge win this weekend, too. They're out proving themselves as a legitimate D1 program. They've only been D1 for a couple years now, but they just. Everyone that's on their schedule, they win. So I'm going to give them the respect they deserve. I think this is a game where Georgia Southern just can't score. I've watched a couple of their. Lines, that is. I obviously haven't watched a Georgia Southern
game. You haven't dialed in?
No.
to
I have
Georgia
not
Southern
watched
play
have
the
not
Eagles.
Watched a play, but I do want to let you know I've been keeping an eye on Appalachian State and Georgia Southern just by accident. So when I saw these two playing and it opened under 17 points, I'm going to go ahead and do that here as Appalachian State has a home night game on a Thursday night. They'll be fired up.
Ooh, that should be fun. Should be fun on Halloween night, nonetheless.
Oh, that's right.
So look out. Things could get a little trick-or-treaty there.
Hopefully nothing spooky for my trifecta, because I can't field any more questions of people saying, what the hell were you thinking?
All right, so Michigan, -17.5 at Maryland. Florida, +5.5 against Georgia here in Jacksonville. App State, -16.5 at home against Georgia Southern. There's your Turco trifecta for the week. What about the NFL? We got a shocker brewing potentially here in Pittsburgh right now as we record this, but maybe that's kind of the perfect way to look at this theme as this kind of wild and wacky NFL season continues along. And it feels like, I don't want to say we're beating a dead drum here because we're not, but at some point when
it's
the storyline week
theme.
In, when the storyline remains the same week in to week out and the players just, you know, the characters change slightly, it's something you have to kind of keep hitting on. And once again, here we are sitting there saying, who's real, who's not, who? What are these names at the top of the standings?
Yeah, I mean, we've done this segment so many times as far as contenders or pretenders, and each week it moves because you cannot figure out who's for real and who's not outside of now the 49ers, who we have apologized
we have finally made sure that we – I think every week we'll offer an additional apology to say that, yes, the Niners are good.
We
apologize
should.
For ripping them early
so,
on in the year.
So I think the three teams are safe to say – okay, you know what? Four teams. I almost got caught up on it again. We know the Patriots are good.
Yep.
We have apologized and proven that we believe in the 49ers now.
Yes.
We like Kyle Shanahan. We love their defense.
The running game is good.
And their running game is awesome. Okay. The Saints, we have always believed in. We had them as our top team in the NFC prior to our issue with the 49ers. But I forgot to tell you this. Our good buddy and listener of the program, Trent, is very upset we're not giving the Packers love. But
and,
the Packers
and
are
I
a
think
team.
They've really a team that have come on to prove themselves as of late. They're almost like another Niners, but just...
Yeah, we owe them an apology because they have a nice pass rush. They still have Aaron Rodgers, who looks like he's on a revenge tour.
Rejuvenated.
That's exactly the best way to describe it. I mean, he is, I think he was sick of the Mahomes talk or something because he's doing Mahomes-type things that he used to do prior to Mahomes.
He's probably like, listen, I invented this.
Yeah, exactly.
So the weird arm angle throws off balance stuff that are ridiculous, crazy strong arms. I'm the one that does this first.
Yep.
And of course, Favre's sitting there at home somewhere saying, well, no, I did it first.
So we got to give the Cheeseheads their credit. They look really good. Aaron Jones out of the backfield, almost playing a little slot receiver type third down back guy. He looks really good. And that pass rush is for real. I mean, the Smith brothers, they're not actual brothers, but you know what I mean. What's his name? Preston Smith and Za'Darius Smith. Both those guys are getting their sacks, and that's been huge for the Packers here. They have Darnell Savage at safety, a rookie that's been playing well. They still have squeaked by a lot of games where it was hard for me to believe in them. But and then the Chiefs, without Mahomes, they squeaked by yesterday, too, on Sunday Night Football. So I think we have four teams now, Saints, 49ers, Patriots, and Packers that we can say are good for sure. And then the rest of the NFL, here we are saying I have no idea.
Okay, so let me play a quick game with you here. I'm going to run through the divisions, and you tell me who is your favorite and if anybody can challenge them. I mean, the AFC East we know is the Patriots.
Yep.
I think we found out we saw officially that the Bills yesterday are not as good as their early season results would have indicated and probably won't challenge them for that. So we'll move on past that one. AFC North, the Ravens. I mean, does anyone even remotely challenge the Ravens in this division?
Well, I was going to give you a nice little homer pick if you asked me prior to kick
but it's 14-0 Dolphins in Pittsburgh.
Because here's what
right
could
now.
Have happened, and it's 14-0, still 8 minutes left in the second. So there's tons of time here for the Steelers to come back. But the Dolphins are terrible. This is a really bad look. So, no, the answer is no. There's one team coming out of the AFC North, and it's got to be the Ravens. But that's a team that I wouldn't trust or be scared of in the playoffs.
We're really going to know a lot more about them when they play the Patriots here.
This Sunday.
Yeah, just Sunday this coming night. Weekend. That should actually be a fun one because that'll actually be a unique test for this New England defense that has gotten a lot of praise here in the early season despite playing a lot of really bad offenses. Okay, so we've got our division winners most likely out of those two divisions. The AFC South. Are you on the Colts bandwagon? Are the Texans still there? Are the Jags now coming alive?
See, you know I love the Colts because I keep using the word solid and consistent. That is such a well-rounded football team.
But that's not great.
No.
Solid and consistent is not great. That's not like – and it might not be enough in this division because all these teams, all four of these teams have – and really I would say the top three mostly – yep. have things that you really like about them, but then they have just enough question marks, sit there and go, well, I can draw up a convincing case as to why this team won't win the division.
And I think the Titans stink, but hey, they could technically win it. They're in the fight. They are. You laugh, but they're in the fight. And I'm saying that record-wise, they obviously aren't going to win it unless something crazy happens. But they have the Tanchise, Tannehill,
like
quarterback.
God. Yeah,
but
for 37 yards yesterday.
To answer
in
your initial
half.
Question, the more the Jags play football, the more I'm starting to believe that they can win this division. Remember, they were a play away from beating the Houston Texans and not having that loss on their resume and having that divisional win in return on their resume.
Really having kind of an inside track.
Yes.
At that
so
point
they play
time.
Them this weekend as a rematch game in London prior to a bye week, prior to maybe Foles coming back. Maybe. That's a whole other story because who knows what they're going to do there. But the Jags are playing some good football. They have some guys stepping up, like we mentioned last week with John Kellum, on defense creating turnovers. So Jags are looking good. Fournette's running the ball well. The Colts are still my favorite right now, but by a hair.
The AFC West, you feel like the Chiefs can tread enough water until Mahomes comes back.
I think they're gonna walk through that division.
Okay, Chargers, despite the win this past week, not gonna rally. The Raiders.
You know, that was such a Chargers win, and I finally stopped picking the Chargers and stopped betting on the Chargers.
Oh, yeah,
because
stay away from them.
They are they're a dumpster fire in the sense that their offense, for some reason, has all the talent in the world, and I love them on paper. You know I did. I picked them to make the dang Super Bowl. But Phillip Rivers can't get the ball downfield anymore.
No, he's finally showing his age.
And it came out of nowhere. It hit him like a wall.
Yep. Well, that's what they say, you know. Age is the – you can't outrun time,
can't
right?
Yeah. Yep, exactly.
Okay, over to the NFC, the East. Boy, who is the favorite out of this, Cowboys?
I'm
going to
finish the AFC
Eagles?
West there, the Raiders.
Okay.
And I just – as you were flipping on me – the Raiders now have left the wild card door wide open as well.
I think two wild cards come out of the South.
I think that's the thing. Yeah, exactly. So, okay, back to where you were going.
NFC East. Who do you like out of that one? I think we can officially write off the R words, and the Giants they're not going anywhere.
No, the Giants won't do it, but they have
this should be a heck of a two-man race between the Cowboys and the Eagles the rest of the way.
I wrote this down. All I said is Eagles turning it around. So
in-depth. That's a storyline.
Those are my in-depth notes, but I've been waiting for this Eagles team to turn it on, and I know we have a couple Eagle listeners here on the podcast. I've been waiting on your boy, Dorian, Carson Wentz, to not have to be a world beater because they haven't had the receivers, and there hasn't been the health there on that side of the ball. They're injured like crazy on defense, but they started running the ball this weekend. I think that was huge for them. They beat a Bills team that has been considered a top dog in the AFC just because of their record, but the Bills haven't played anyone either. So the Eagles are supposed to be, and this is rumored, of course, but big buyers on the trade market tomorrow, which we record on Mondays.
Yeah,
you're going to be listening to this. The Eagles may, by the time you listen to this, already have a couple trades that have helped them bolster their defense, and maybe a downfield threat because DeSean Jackson's been hurt all year. So don't forget that the Eagles have a lot of talent just waiting in the wings, no pun intended. But I actually like the Cowboys here.
Okay.
Because
both of these teams are highly flawed, by the way.
Oh, yeah. Tons of question marks.
But I'm with you. I just think that the pieces that are currently in place favor the Cowboys.
Yep. And the Cowboys have Dak, who's just Mr. Consistency. If you doubt him every year, he throws a really nice deep ball and doesn't get a lot of credit for that.
Well, eventually Ezekiel Elliott will play his way into shape, and then that'll help too. Because there is no doubt whatever he did in the offseason was not his typical routine. Because you watch games with him, and he comes to the sideline after like two rushes,
gassed.
And he is gassed.
Yeah.
Reminds me of Leonard Fournette a little bit of last year.
Keep in mind, their O-line's been banged up, too.
Yep.
So
yep.
I'm expecting him you know, he's been used to just running through semi-wide holes because their O-line has been the best in football for a couple years now. So I like the Cowboys a lot, but you're right. That is a two-team race there that's going to be fun to watch to the end.
AFC North, I'm going to guess your pick here is Green Bay.
NFC North, yes. I'm going to pick...
NFC North, yes. Yeah,
I'm picking Green Bay,
but the Vikings
yeah.
Lions.
The Lions are still alive despite being jobbed earlier in the season.
They win that game over the Packers. Are we having a different conversation here?
And that's the whole thing with the NFL, where they say it's a game of inches, but it's literally like a game of a play or two this season for each team where you could say, hey, they could be... What's their record now? They have four wins? Or
they're like three...
Three,
and one or whatever.
Yeah. Yeah. So if they had that one win, they could be fighting for the wild card. Matt Stafford's playing really good football, and he's not turning it over like he typically does, which is the key. The Vikings are so well-rounded, though, that they're going to give the Packers a run for their money, but right now it's got to be the Packers division. The way A-Rod's playing is the difference, and he doesn't even have Devontae Adams back yet.
That's going to be a lot of fun to watch. Slightly less fun to watch will be the NFC South, which I think this one's pretty much in the bag at this point, especially with Sunday's result out in San Fran.
Yep, and the Saints, that's their division to lose. You're referencing here the San Fran loss from the Kyle Allen-led Panthers. They said he's going to remain the starter. I just saw that today. Which is interesting.
I've heard an argument, and it's somewhat compelling to say that what has Cam Newton done over the last 2.5 years to sit there and say that he should be the starter, despite the fact that he's Cam Newton and he led you to a Super Bowl and won an MVP 4 years ago, as compared to Kyle Allen has led you, you know, has at least been the guy in charge for a bunch of wins. And, he played bad yesterday, but he also played bad against one of the best defenses in the NFL on the road. If he continues to play bad, then you have an option to go back to him.
Well, it was his first bad game, and he hasn't thrown a pick prior to that, right?
Nope.
Yeah, so you can't yank his leash that quickly. Christian McCaffrey's that team, though, and as he goes, they go. It's not a Kyle Allen-led team, and I think them not having enough weapons out wide will end up being a detriment to them. The Falcons are loaded, but, man, they are an absolute mess. Jameis Winston and the Bruce Arians Bucks are terrible. He's a turnover machine, no matter who Arians says the blame falls on. So the Saints are going to run away with that one, no doubt.
Finally, the NFC West. The best team in the division is clear, but there are two teams behind them that have a lot of success, one of them just went to the Super Bowl last year. The other one has an MVP candidate and quarterback. And I don't necessarily think that this division is wrapped up yet, despite respecting what the Niners are and how good they are.
Yeah, there's still a lot of football to be played. And the Seahawks, they look so flawed. Every week they are doing something to make me doubt them. But they keep winning. At the end of the day, they're getting W's. And they're certainly going to challenge the 49ers because they're going to be on their heels long enough to maybe have the 49ers slip up a couple times. Because like you mentioned, you don't really like Garoppolo, you know?
And you go play a game in wet Seattle, and all of a sudden it's like, okay. Now, granted, the Niners are built to win those type of games because they run the ball and play defense. But
the thing is, Scott, when we talked quarterbacks in the beginning of the year and you keep touching on it and kind of humbling me as I say – and we've already apologized to the 49ers, so we have to say that every time we say their name. But with Garoppolo,
if like
they
an
idiot. If they do stop their running game with Tevin Coleman and Bereda, what can Garoppolo do? We really don't know. So maybe the Seahawks have that formula, and we haven't seen it yet. So I'm not going to just sign off on them winning the division because Russell Wilson, just 2 weeks ago, I sat here and told you he's going to be the MVP.
Yeah.
And now, you know, he's still in the conversation and we don't know who it's going to be yet, but the Seahawks are still winning football games.
Yeah, they're a little Jekyll and Hyde. Every time you finally come around, you go, you know what, I think the Seahawks are good. They lay an egg. And then you kind of get right back into the same cycle of, well, what are these guys type deal. But unquestionably, the top three teams in the West are very good. And the Rams too. Don't, you know, if they when they establish
the
run,
the Rams.
And you get them in one of those sunny late afternoon days in the Coliseum, and there's more fans for the other team than the Rams there, but they're still playing well. I mean, you have to respect them because of what they've done and the talent they still have there, and they're all in.
Yep.
So that's going to be – the NFC, unquestionably, at this point, is the more exciting league to watch as far as how things are going to shake out. It's like the NFC, and then it's the AFC South.
Yeah, it's really –
and no one, unless you have a dog in the fight in the AFC South, is sitting there going, the AFC South is interesting.
Yeah.
Because it's made up of a whole bunch of teams that aren't all that interesting.
The Rams, a team that had – they just played the Bengals, and the week before they played the – God, they played someone else bad. I mean, they're a team that's benefiting from – again, not beating a really good football team yet.
Right.
So they're going to hang around. They have all the talent in the world with Ramsey and Donald and Cooper Kupp now playing good football. They still have Todd Gurley on his little pitch count, but they still have Todd Gurley and Jared Goff. So they're a good football team, and that division is probably right up there with the AFC South as being the most competitive and the NFC North. The NFC North is head and shoulders top dog in the entire NFL as far as just Lions, Vikings, and Packers being really good football teams. So, you know, next week, I'm going to go ahead and read the future. We're probably going to have the same exact segment, and we'll have fresh content.
Similar.
Because it's going to be brand new, because everyone's just playing each other so tough, and you don't know what to think of anyone.
Well, we wrapped it up by kind of going around and hitting on a lot of things today, but I think we're actually at the point now where you can sit there and start forecasting a little bit. We don't have all the answers yet, but certainly we're to the point of the season now where we definitely know who's not good, and we definitely know which teams are good, and we're just trying to kind of figure out the messy middle, if you will.
We're finally getting closer to having a clear picture.
Exactly.
You know, the fog has almost cleared.
All right, so you get a Turco trifecta, and I want to be able to end this thing with I never came up with, we'll call it maybe a Manzi Minute, but I'm going to allow you to chime in here, and I just want to hit on a couple of quick little things to wrap up this show. Did you know that Sunday was the 21st sports equinox in the history of sports? Do you know what that is?
The equinox, where all the major sports were played on the
correct.
Same day?
Correct. MLB, NFL, NBA, and NHL all in action on the same day for just the 21st time in history. World Series. The Astros have come back to take a 3-2 lead over the Nationals. Only three teams in history have won after losing the first two games at home. Do you have any idea any of them?
Are they recent?
The most recent one was in the 90s.
And then I wouldn't get it. My only guess is, what did the Marlins do?
Nope, not the Marlins. Okay. I'll cut you off there. The 85 Kansas City Royals, the 86 Miracle Mets. You might remember that series for It Gets Through Buckner.
Yes, yep.
Bill Mookie
Buckner,
Wilson.
I'm with you.
And then the 1996 New York Yankees over the Atlanta Braves. And I'll wrap with this. November, right around the corner, actually coming up later on this week. We kind of started off October talking about how it's such a great sports month. What stands out to you about sports in the month of November?
November, always. I mean, I think Thanksgiving right away. And
so you're thinking those football games
always just...
Now we even have college basketball, so it's like, oh, you get to pick your...
I can't wait for college basketball this season. But yes, I always think Thanksgiving football, it's a tradition unlike any other.
Yes, as long as my college basketball team is not playing in a basketball game that day, I'm leaning toward the NFL. But it is it's another good sports month, if you will, because we're getting into the meat of the NFL season. We're getting in the home stretch of college football.
We should have a clear picture by then, right?
Yeah, we will by the end of this month. Really have a clear picture when it comes to the college football landscape, and here we are into the NBA and NHL season's college basketball tipping off in 1 week from Tuesday. How about that? Is the opening to openers to college basketball season around the country, and we'll have plenty more content for you as this sports seasons keep rolling along. This was another fun episode of the Sports Bar Podcast. Appreciate everybody chiming in over the week since we've started this thing. Those of you that have had a gambling bent have really found a way to let yourselves be known, whether that's Bods and his his I guess his spreadsheets and his formulas he used, or
the new Swin Six.
Yeah, our new friend Ben Swinnerton, new listener of the program, old friend of mine, and his Swin Six. So you could check that out. He's tweeted at us if you're looking for more thoughts on those gambling lines on Twitter. And we want to thank you all, and continue to subscribe, rate, and review Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, and Spotify. For Alex, I'm Scott. This has been another episode of the Sports Bar Podcast.
The hurricane warning is on.